Recording is on. Let's get ready to rumble!
Rather not.
Hello, and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and... Has someone got a rattle?
It's like a little baby. There's a little baby in a perambulator.
Never mind. Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 115. We are back. We weren't here last week. We, unfortunately, someone said our secret code word, which activates our neural transmitters and forces us to... assassinate heads of state. So, but we're back now.
Will, let's not lie. It just made you pee your pants.
the heads of state thing sounded a lot cooler than that.
He's acid. Tracy, he does pee acid, so in the right circumstances, you know.
Yeah, that's what too much Coca-Cola does to you when you're young. anyway, with me is Tracy Erickson.
Hello.
And John Jordan.
Hello.
And I am Will Wilson. And we are recording the iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 115. Let's kick off into going straight into news. Let's do that. Let's do it.
News!
Okay, first up on the news this week is that the iPad 2 is about to be announced next week. There you go. No more rumors. It's going to be announced next week. Actually, that's not been confirmed, but...
it pretty much has.
Pretty much. I mean,
they haven't come out and said the iPad 2 will be announced next week. They've just included a picture of an iPad and come to our event next week.
With a big 2 on it.
With a big 2 on it. But it's also on the 2nd of March, so it could be the 2nd, John.
Well, that's why they've done it on the 2nd of March, isn't it, do you think, reckon? Maybe.
Yeah, so there we go. So no more rumours from Taiwanese brokerages or DigiTimes with its made-up rumour mill consisting of flimsy bits of plastic. The iPad 2 is out next week. So what does everyone expect from it? We're all expecting a front-facing camera.
What camera, else? Stereo speakers,
yeah, stereo
on
speakers.
The bottom. Probably a better touch screen, you know,
better touch screen.
More. You know, I was actually watching a demonstration of just kind of, because you could think like, wow, the multi-touch is pretty cool. Like, how could that get, like, why would you need anything better? There's actually a lot of ways that they can make the touch functionality a lot better, especially for a tablet device. Like, they could actually make it so that it can just read input more accurately so that you could actually like handwrite on the tablet if you were to put like a sheet of paper or something over it, because right now if you do that it's not very accurate. But you know, they could do stuff like that. It'll probably have more processing power. What do you think, John?
Well, without talking specifically about what they're going to do with iPad 2, it was interesting at Mobile World Congress, which we'll probably come on to later, and all the Android 3 tablets there, some of those there, obviously they're not out yet, so it's a not a correct comparison. But some of those did make the current iPad feel a little bit kind of dated. And partly that's the design, because obviously it's a very Apple curve, you know, simple thing. Whereas, you know, certainly like the Samsung Galaxy, and the LG ones, and even the touchpad, HP touchpad. You know, they were.
You can't touch this.
You touched it. You got away with it. It was interesting that. You know, I mean, as you would say, kind of the same that happened with iPhone. You know, Apple got in there first and kind of, in a sense, defined to a degree the first kind of touch screen for smartphones, or the first wave that came out, and done the same with tablets. But I think obviously that's going to change quite a lot. So it'll be interesting to see how Apple, you know, kind of reacts to that. I guess the other thing is, you know, there's always talk about what the screen resolution is going to be, isn't it? So. And whether iPad 3 will come out in September because they couldn't make the screens, blah, 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 blah. So that'll be interesting to see if I assume they won't mention that at all. But in terms of the commentary of the punters or us journalists, you know, will we see this as like the actually an iPod, kind of what iPad 1.5, really?
I've always, you know, I mean, that's a great observation. I mean, the one thing I always take away from, you know, now that I've kind of been following Apple for the last few years, every time they release a new iteration of an existing product, everybody always expects it to be sort of a step up or a step forward. And oftentimes what Apple actually does is they step over to the side.
No,
and I think iPhone 4 is a really good example of that, where, you know, everybody was saying, oh, it's going to have an OLED screen. Mm. It's going to have these features and this resolution. And then Apple didn't do that. They said, we're actually doing this different screen technology, and we're going to do this different way of incorporating the antenna into the phone. So they are, you know, to be, I guess, to restate what I said, it is always a step forward, but it's always an unexpected way. It's unexpected how they get there. It's never as linear. And that's what makes them different. That's what makes them different.
That's partly the fact is, as happened with the Retina display, they just completely invent a bit of technology. It doesn't mean anything at all. I mean, so they went laterally. I mean, it's partly that their unique thing is they can get away with. I mean, obviously, Jobs won't be there. Right. I would be amazed if he's there. But they can just come up. Someone can come up with a Apple term, and suddenly that defines the industry. I mean, I just don't think they can get away with that anymore. Now everyone's kind of caught up with them a little bit. So it will be interesting. I think this is kind of interesting, not in terms of technology, but kind of how they. Because we know they're kind of a little bit under pressure, I think, for iPad 2, or that seems to be the rumor. So it'd be interesting to see how they place it, whether they just treat it very vanilla and just this is what it is, which is probably what you would do if Jobs wasn't there. I mean, Jobs can, you know, he's the one who can go, oh, magic device, and everyone goes, magic,
right?
You know, I mean, that's brilliant, isn't it?
I think the other thing is they also understand they've had both successes and failures in terms of software and services, but they've always, you know, they've always been pretty keen on not just putting hardware out there, but backing it up with software services. Yep. And iTunes obviously is their greatest success, and the greatest evidence pointing to them, you know, supporting these range of iPods and iPhones and iPad devices with a compelling platform behind it. So I think that's, you know, I think they, you know, they're very smart. They know that they're under pressure, as you said. They also know that there is only so much you can do on the hardware side, particularly given that there's so much competition out there. And so I think for me, I'm looking forward to seeing what are they going to do on the software side? What are they going to do to make it more compelling to use iPad? Obviously, from a gaming perspective, you know, what are they going to be doing to improve Game Center? What are they going to be doing to encourage game developers to actually make iPad games that aren't just simple, you know, up-resed ports of iPhone and iPod Touch games? Those are what I think are really interesting. And that's why I also think that the timing of the announcement is so ironic. Yeah, it's March 2nd, it's iPad 2, but they know that it's in the middle of Game Developers Conference. Yeah. They know that all of these game developers and games media are going to be there. That's not unintentional. So that excites me, particularly because when we were writing about iPad for the first time officially, you know, last January, it really was an exciting device because you can do a lot with it. It has a good amount of power. It has a really nice screen. There's a lot of potential to do strategy games, adventure games, things of that sort. But a lot of that potential has really not been fulfilled. You know, we were going through our list of nominees for the Pocket Gamer Awards, which we're going to be announcing soon. And
next
there's
week.
Right. And there's actually I was surprised at how few iPad games, you know, really kind of substantial iPad games have been released in the last year. It's not a lot.
Well, I'm looking forward to being able to pay for my shopping with the iPad by taking it out of my pockets. Oh no, that's the iPhone. Anyway,
yeah. Make sure to add those prescription pills to that list there, Will.
I can't feel my body. Right. Moving on from the iPad 2, thank God the rumors are going to stop. The rumors haven't been quite as bad as the iPad 1, but
It'll just move on to iPad 3, won't it?
I mean, yeah, well, but we were talking about it. We briefly touched upon it. Mobile World Congress. We were there. Pocket Gamer had a presence at the largest mobile. Is it the largest mobile convention? Well, there were 60,000 people there. It was big. And yeah, we got to play on all the iPad killers, as they're called, by journalists. it's an interesting show. As we were saying with the iPad 2, there's a lot of tablets coming out, and then indeed a lot of phones, which are really going to be pushing Apple a lot more this year. But it'll be interesting to see how they reacted.
Quickly, what was the best thing that you saw at the show? What was the worst?
Best thing I saw at the show was probably I really liked the both the HP's Palm OS, although I couldn't touch it, and also I liked the Samsung Galaxy S2. It was a very nice phone. I liked Honeycomb as well. I was impressed at how much they've done. But I think the overall best thing for me was just Google's crazy marketing stunts, which they pulled off quite well, including the pins. But worst thing, I guess, was the 3D games and the Optimus 3D. I think the phone itself is actually very nice, but it was just bad ports of...
Only two of them were bad, though, Will, weren't they?
Yeah, Let's Golf 2 wasn't too bad. But
I thought Let's Golf 2 was good.
Yeah, it was good, but I was a little bit disappointed, to be honest. I'm a big 3D fan. You know, I came into that thinking, yeah. I was actually very tempted when I had to buy a new monitor recently to get a 120Hz one, just purely because then I could, you know, then I could save up and get an NVIDIA glasses, and then I could run Crysis in 3D, and I could sit there being really sad on my own, wearing glasses. But yeah, so I was kind of big hopes for Nova, especially, but that didn't look very good. And Asphalt 6 was terrible.
But it's not that they didn't look very good. It's the control mechanism means that they're never going to work on a 3D screen like that, because you have to move the device. It's an accelerometer based, you know, it can never work. What were they thinking? I mean, it's just I don't understand. With that narrow 3D kind of sweet spot, you don't want to move the screen angle at all. So go figure. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Are you saying are you saying that Nintendo are wrong to put a gyroscope and accelerometer in the 3DS?
No, but I mean, in something to come up, but at least with a 3DS, you've got the button, so you don't have to move the screen, do you? So, I mean, obviously, people are going to experiment to see what works best, but clearly, not moving the screen very much is, I would have thought, kind of 3D game design 101.
Well, you know what's interesting is to talk about 3DS. When I was visiting Namco to look at their iPhone stuff, they're like, oh, you want to check out... I think it was Pac-Man and Galaga. It's a combo game that they're doing. And the Galaga game is like a 3D shooter on rails. And you tilt the device to go, you know, to like shoot. And or actually uses the gyroscope, which is even more annoying because you actually physically twist your body, which is, it does not work. But that aside, it actually, the 3D automatically turns off. If you tilt it too much, which I thought kind of is like, okay, that's good because of the issue that you're articulating, John. But at the same time, kind of lame, because the whole reason why I would want to play on the 3DS is to have the 3D. So at the point that it's turning off because the game is making me do something, I don't know. I just think it's kind of odd.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'm a 3D, brilliant thing. talking of 3D, let's go to the next news story, which is that and talking of PC as well, which I was doing with my monitor talk, Minecraft is coming to the iOS. Well, iPhone. Actually, it's also coming to Android as well, but let's forget about that. It's coming to iOS devices officially, after about a billion unofficial clones came out, which were all slightly lacking in certain areas. When is it supposed to be coming out? He expanded his team recently, so I think it's
from one to two.
Well, yeah, but it sounds better when I say expand his team. It's like he's got a professional group behind him. But yeah, Mr. Notch Marcus Pearson. Yeah, it will be. No, it'll take some time. I don't know. I can't see any date.
It's just announced
sometime this year. Yeah, sometime this year. I knew there was a date ish attached. Yes, and it will have additions that make the most sense for iPhone and iPad's touchscreen. I don't know what that means, really.
No.
it's a good game, though. I lost many evenings building my giant bridge between
sadness and happiness, was it?
Between sadness and happiness. That's what I called the two mountains, yes. How did you know? Yeah, no, it was good. My bridge was easily better than these computer chips and stuff other people have made. Computer chips. I bought a bridge. Anyway. That's good. I'm sure everyone's looking forward to that. going on to the next news article. Telltale. They're back. They are publishing Hector episodes 2 and 3. Or Hector, Badge of Carnage.
Hector.
Yes, Badge of Carnage will return. It's been a while since the first episode, actually. Ben really liked it. He was a massive fan, I remember.
I reviewed it and didn't.
I still haven't played it. So, there's three elements. Should really. It looked good.
I know, it was just ridiculously... I mean, to be honest, it just struck me as a really talented team, because I think they were kind of more like an art animation team who hadn't done many games before. Certainly not. I think this was their first kind of standalone game. But obviously a massive fan of that type of game, and then made an incredibly complicated, obtuse game. That if that was your favourite genre, it would be your game of the year. But for anyone else, you know, that's certainly not my favourite genre, but I'm not, you know, I haven't got a problem with that kind of genre of game.
But, I think you've got a problem with that kind of genre of game, John.
I have got a problem. No.
You want to take this outside? Yeah.
So while it was lovely, it just literally took forever to get anywhere in the game. So I think basically, you know, a startup team often just needs a bit of help to someone to say, well, that's just too hard. You know, you don't want to put something really hard. I mean, the first puzzle took me about half an hour to do. I mean, it was supposed to be like, that certainly wasn't the hardest one, but you don't have a really hard puzzle straight away when people are just learning, you know, what to do. So
I think this is good news. I think, John, you're absolutely right. I think Telltale will kind of go in there. I'm hoping. Kind of go in there and say, you know what, let's tweak these puzzles. Let's, you know, there wasn't a hint system in the game, was there?
There was a kind of, but kind of the hint system for people who don't like hint systems. It wasn't like Revolution putting a hint system in.
Yeah. See, Telltale, if they're going to play an active role, which I imagine they will since they're publishing it, will say that sort of stuff has to be incorporated because, you know, I think, you know, Telltale has had their issues with iOS devices, you know, particularly with knowing how to design their interfaces around the touchscreen. And also, more importantly, some technical issues, which have actually gotten better. Their last couple of releases have been okay. But their biggest strength is being able to tweak gameplay so that it's approachable, accessible, so you can actually finish the game. And I think if they can do that for Hector, episodes 2 and 3, that'd be great. Because I think it's one of those games, you know, it's like, I agree with you, John. I don't think the gameplay design is very good in that first episode, but the characters have a particular appeal. So it's hard for people to sort of separate the two issues and be like, well, it's not a very good game, yet it's a really kind of quirky, neat concept. And it's like, how do you reconcile those? It's like, well, you like one part of it, but you don't like the other. And so, you know, hopefully these next two episodes, Telltale can kind of help them do that polish, get it all kind of tweaked and tuned, and so that way there isn't that sort of weird difference.
Well, I should really try out the original so I can contribute properly to the conversation. Never mind.
You know what I think, though? Here's a game that I thought nailed it. Both of those aspects, Scarlet and the Spark of Life. very unique kind of characters and game world, but the gameplay was also good. Like, it wasn't very obtuse. It was very straightforward. And it worked. I thought that's sort of the game. If you're thinking, well, I liked Hector and I don't understand how you could do the puzzles any better, I would point to Scarlet and the Spark of Life, you know, a new adventure game that has a lot of the same sort of humorous vibe to it, but is a little bit more polished and a little bit more approachable.
And I do think you're completely right. There is polish that is the important thing. I was just thinking when you were saying that, I remember World Congress, we met up with the guys who did the Hamlet game, which is a kind of wasn't quite as kind of angular as Hector, but quite a interesting kind of art style and quite lateral in that kind of game. And we were just chatting about it, and I was just, again, that was a game that I did about the first four quests in it, and then just completely had no idea. And that was quite a simple game, and it was just, you know, you just have to be very, very careful, I think, how you allow people into those games, partly because there is a fan base who wants things to be as hard as possible, and partly because obviously there's a much bigger potential fan base who just, they want to think a little bit, but they don't want to, you know, you mm-hmm. have to think, how can we get them through it? You know, if they've been on this one puzzle for 5 minutes, can they not get through it? Or anyway.
Well, I don't like all this talk. It's like, it's dumbing down, isn't it?
It's all
dumbing down.
Well,
I don't like that. If you get stuck, you should be given an electric shock through the answer. It's punishment. And it should just increase the voltage every, like, 10 minutes. So, I hate people like you. Anyway, well, that's it for the news. we should go on to the rumour mine, because last time I saw it, the entrance to the rumour mine was actually overflowing with fact. So, we'll have
Facts.
To... Fact. Pure, golden fact. Have you never seen pure fact mined from the ground? It's a wonderful thing, John. It's a wonderful thing. Let's go down there right now.
Rimmer. Rimmer.
Of course, it is a wonderful thing once we get past these otters that guard the entrance to the chamber where he keeps the fact. Yeah, okay. It was good work there, Tracy.
Please continue, Will. Continue.
All right. While I try and solve the riddle of the Sphinx, which is left here on the floor, I think you've located the first rumor.
Yes, first of five. It's a special GDC 2011 bonanza.
GDC 2011 bonanza.
First one.
Sorry.
Apple to unveil new version of Game Center along iPad 2 next week.
Ah, that'd be good, because the iPad, it needs to for the iPad, in my opinion.
But is that, Tracy, is that, presumably then that's part of an iOS 4.x, or is that an iOS 5.x release?
The rumor miner hasn't articulated. Hmm. But... you know, I imagine that it'll be pretty much along the same lines. The release will be along the same lines of how they did Game Center. So it'll come along as it'll either be. I mean, obviously the new iPad will have some new firmware, so that probably will be. I would guess 5.0, maybe. I don't know.
You think that's quite a big one, isn't it? To do a 5.0 is quite.
Well, it depends on what the hardware brings. You know, what I mean, if the hardware has a bunch of new features, then they could end up doing that. I don't know. I mean, I think that's, in a way, it's kind of unimportant. I mean, in terms of whether or not it's, you know, 5.0 or 4.4 or whatever. I think that what's more important is that Game Center sucks right now on iPad. And
last time I used it on an iPhone.
I think it's lacking a lot of features. It doesn't, you know, I actually have a weird problem with it. I don't know. Maybe you guys can attest to this. Are there separate, when I log into Game Center on my iPad, it's like a separate account.
What do you mean separate account?
So like, okay. So I have the same, I have, you know, my PG Tracy username.
Yeah.
And so I've used that when Game Center launched on iPhone and iPod Touch. And then when iPad got updated with Game Center, I logged in with that information, mm-hmm. and it had that information, so it logged me into the account. Mm-hmm. But it only shows the games that I play on iPad. It doesn't include any of the stuff that I had used on iPhone and iPod Touch. It's like a completely separate thing. And
it shares the same friends, though.
Yeah, no, it doesn't even show my friends that I have listed on. It's really weird. So that just to me highlights, like, it sucks. It sucks. Like, there's some bug or there's something wrong with what I did. So it could totally be my fault. But
there are, I mean, there have been like lots of, I mean, there are lots of odd things that you do find with Game Center. Like, our friend Keith just can't, something happened and he can't log in at all now. He complained to Apple and, I mean, he literally can't use it. I don't know what he did. From what he told me, he didn't do anything particularly odd. But, yeah.
Wow. Well, if there's anything they could do to actually really solidify, you know, sort of make an appeal to game developers, it would be to fix Game Center. I mean,
I'm checking my iPad now, and it's definitely, I don't know what odd thing you got going on, because I've got everything the same.
Yeah, my one's linked up all. Yeah. Okay.
Although I also do have an odd thing that because I get so many preview builds from people, you end up sometimes logging into like the developers.
Oh yeah.
Kind of little build section for Game Center rather than I've no idea how I managed to do that. But
yeah, I think it could be good. I mean, if you look at when Microsoft launched Xbox Live, and just by creating that sort of infrastructure there for online play and the ability to it encouraged game developers to actually use it.
Yeah.
But game developers don't want to have to build a lot of that infrastructure on their own, that network code. And so just by having a functioning social gaming network, you know, I mean, look at OpenFaint. I mean, developers are, it's easy to implement. They can plop it in their game. They know they're going to have access to certain features. And if Apple can do, Apple's really the only one that can do that on, you know, on a platform-wide basis and actually make it compelling enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, some developers are using it, you know, but it just doesn't work. If they can do it, I think it'd be great.
Another thing, obviously now with Nokia connecting up with Microsoft, you know, obviously Xbox Live is going to be everywhere. So there is a competitive reason as well. So.
And they can do this. They just, you know, they can do it. They just need to hire the right people. Let's hope that this rumor is true. Next one. Real Racing 2 is coming to Android.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting.
Android 2.2, 2.1, or 2.3?
Yeah, right? My God. I imagine that it'll only be it'll be for
tablets.
It'll be high-end devices thing.
Yeah, it's going to be high-end devices. Mm. I don't know about the tablets.
I would.
May be a Tegra Zone. A Tegra Zone thing.
Yeah. It's not just. Yeah. I mean, Tegra is one thing, but I mean, I just think the push on those tablets to get kind of real high end content in there. I mean, certainly again, what we saw last week, it's just a lot of developers who, some of whom are already like iPad guys, you know, who really kind of, that's the big focus, where, you know, getting there quickly and make sure you can get, you know, sell for a premium price. So, you know, $10, something like that. And actually, you know, Real Five Minute, a studio who would actually handle that really well, wouldn't they? I mean,
Yeah, that's a good question.
There's no EA lurking around that area right now, or Gameloft, as far as I saw. There probably is.
Well, Gameloft would be quicker to do it.
Oh yeah, Gameloft will be there for sure. Well, we have three more rumors. These ones are quick though. First, Pac-Man Championship Edition DX being ported to iPhone and iPod Touch. So this is the new version, not the current edition that is available for download on the App Store.
To be fair, I'm one of the very few Pac-Man fans that actually prefer Championship Edition to DX.
Oh, really?
It's good. I like DX, but I find it kind of a bit simplistic in its tactics. A lot of people were disagreeing with me there. But it's very much... it feels... It's a bit weird. The feeling I had when I played it on the 360, I think, was that it was very much on rails, which is odd. It's like the Call of Duty of Pac-Man games.
Oh, God.
However, it's still an excellent game.
Well, yeah. You know what? I hope they don't do the funky in-app purchase thing that they did with Championship Edition. You know, just don't do that. And if they don't do that, I think that'll make everybody happy.
It was a bit weird, though, because, I mean, it was one of those in-app purchases where, like, it was 80% of the game was an in-app purchase. But the 20%, the 20% that it left, I was actually completely happy with. I was sort of thinking to myself, you're trying to charge me £3 more for these other modes when you've got like infinite modes on these ones. I can't be bothered with that.
Didn't it make you feel happy that you didn't have to, you got all everything you wanted without having to pay any more? I mean, the whole point about that model is they know, yeah, the reason you use that model is lots more people download it than would download it if you made them pay up front. So you know that 90% aren't going to pay anything. So
it was paid. It was paid, though.
I was paid.
Yeah, you had to pay money before it, and then 80% of the content wasn't there. It was for like three times the amount that you paid originally. And
but I mean, Namco at the moment they've gone for more of a try before you buy model, haven't they? I mean, a lot of their stuff now is you download it for free and then you buy the rest of the game as an in-app, which is, you know, the whole Game Loft thing. So,
which that is fine. That is fine. I'm okay with that. You know, they just released Ridge Racer for iPad, and the quality of the game is a completely different discussion than the pricing structure. But that's free. It's totally free. And I think it only has like one race you can do.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But it's free. So, I mean, that, you know, you can't get too upset about that. It's just that with Pac-Man Championship Edition is they actually made you pay for, you know, a handful of levels and then charged you for the rest. It I don't know. It just didn't seem right. Last two rumors. First one is about Final Fantasy 13, actually, which was another piece of news that was announced for iPhone and iPod Touch sometime next month. That game, which was just announced this week, is coming out before the long-delayed Final Fantasy Tactics, which had also been paid for a spring release and is now potentially delayed until late April or early May.
Confusing. Can't believe it's been delayed again. Sorry.
Well, I think technically they said like spring, so April and May are spring, but I think there was kind of a general feeling like it was going to be a March title, so I'll give Square Enix the benefit of the doubt on that. But I think it's telling that you're a game that was announced this week is going to come out before that. And not just a small game. Like Final Fantasy III, that remake is a pretty substantial game. So guess they're having trouble getting that tactics game working. Last rumor. One of our most anticipated titles for iPhone and iPod Touch of this year, Anomaly Warzone Earth, is finished. And the reason why it has not been released is because a publisher has picked it up, and that will be announced next week. The game will be out sometime in March. I have done some digging after Rumor Miner had passed that info over, and I had done some digging, and I cannot get answers from anybody about who the publisher is. My gut says that it's probably Chillingo.
Really?
But I'm not 100% sure because it might actually be Gameloft, because there was discussion that I had with their PR person who basically said that they've been interested in trying to push their publishing side for a couple of years now.
But
they just haven't really done much of anything
with
it.
They've only done one publishing game,
right? Exactly. But apparently they're going to start pushing aggressively for that. They're actively looking for games to publish. So this could be part of that. It certainly, I've played this game. It's really good. It's very high quality. Yeah, I mean, you played it as well because you were on the judges panel for, yeah. So, I mean, either of those, you know, for Game Loft, I think that would be a fantastic fit for them in terms of quality. For Chillingo, I mean, Chillingo picks up games all the time, and that's they are a publisher. I have, you know,
although it's kind of,
I just don't know.
I'd kind of wonder if Chillingo, because I kind of, when you said someone was picking up, it kind of struck me as more of a kind of like an EA type thing. I mean, obviously Chillingo and EA are,
yeah,
but because almost, I don't know. I mean, Chillingo still, for me, its reputation is kind of quite casual games, whereas this isn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a bit more of a kind of console style game, isn't it? So,
yeah, I don't disagree with that. Mm. And I thought that initially too, but I think, you know, what's very interesting is the last couple of months, I feel just the way people have been talking about Chillingo and the general sense and the sort of titles that they're picking up is that that's kind of where a lot of the action is at. You know, they just signed Painkiller, which is not a casual game at all.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're sort of, Not to knock EA, but they're, you know, Chillingo has much better developer relations. They're much easier to work with. And I think that developers are more open to the idea of working with Chillingo, even if they've traditionally had that sort of casual, you know, market sort of vibe about them. You know, versus EA. And I think it's almost more attractive to go with Chillingo in that sense because they get the sort of might of EA there because they're part of EA without sort of having to work directly with them. So I think that's, you know, certainly that was the appeal for the developer of Painkiller, you know, Machine Works Northwest, who is not that far from where I live. And I know the guy who owns the studio, and that's that is precisely one of the reasons why he wanted to go with Chillingo versus going with a bigger publisher. I don't know. We'll see. I honestly, I don't know who's picking it up. I'm dying to know because I really want to play that game.
Yeah.
But we'll find out next week.
Cool.
So I've just I think I've solved the riddle of the Sphinx now.
The what?
The riddle of the Sphinx that he left here on the floor. I've been working on this while you've been going through the rumors. The answer is.
What we've been playing.
All right. So what we've been playing, Fields. Who is going to start? I think we're going to start with John this week.
Are we? Okay.
Yeah.
I've actually been playing something again. Not very much. I just. Obviously, we're off to GDC next week. Well, me and Tracy are. So.
Yeah, rub it in.
What do you mean? You went to Barcelona.
You were just
saying,
yeah. Oh, dear, I'd love people. To go to Barcelona. Jeez.
John was just out in Barcelona as well.
Yeah, but I'm like in Portland. I mean,
All right.
You maybe say.
Again, rubbing it in. So, what game have you been playing, John?
Sorry, yes, Gorog, carried away. So, I'm still apparently all the developers of RoboSocket fell around laughing as I tried to explain it last week. So, I don't know, in tears of joy or tears of grief. But, yes, yeah, so I've still been playing that, which, as I said last week, is a bit of a cross between Tetris and Pipe Mania, where the, and kind of match three games, where robots with different pipe bits drop down, and you have to join them up into more than five to make them disappear. That's quite sweet. And another game that just came out yesterday, which is called Tiny Wings. I don't know if any of you guys have come across Tiny Wings. And it's kind of like a... Like how iPhone games used to be before all these big companies started making them. And it's like a one-man band, and Tiny Wings is a little bird, and it's very simple. So there's an undulating kind of play field, which is kind of like hills. And when you hold your finger down on the screen, he gets heavy. So if he's going down a hill, he kind of speeds up, and then as you let your finger off the screen. His little wing. He hasn't got little wings. He can't fly very high, but he kind of like flies. So it's like a basically like a high speed game where you're just like tapping, and you can pick up kind of bonuses and stuff. But it's very nicely done. Very kind of, I guess, kind of pastely artwork, and yeah, and lots of developers are raving about it. So it's like a typical kind of iPhone 99 cent game, and it's very Moorish. So I would recommend checking that out.
Cool. Sounds.
You're falling asleep. Run away. He's gonna. He's off and running.
So that's Little Things by now.
No.
No, I know. I will go next, as I don't like going last. It's a fear of mine. Sorry. It's like the fear of books. Don't know what it is about them. Anyway, I have been playing this week Battlenoids and Gunbrothers. And Gun Brothers, just adding that there. John, I'm just adding it for John's benefit.
Well, because after 2 months you've finally overtaken my level.
Yes, I have. And your character still hasn't swapped out his pistols after my complaining yesterday.
I don't have time to swap out pistols.
Anyway, Battlenoids is the game I was reviewing this week. The developers just left a comment actually on the on the review thread, where he thanks me for giving his game a kicking. To be fair, it's not a very good game. The controls are absolutely broken. There is potential in it. The graphics are very nice. It's a Unity engine game, and it's sort of a. Let me explain how it works. You're a robot who can get into a ship. And fly around this little area. You're meant to be picking up these triangles, pyramids, because they're three-dimensional, which, as we all know from earlier on, I love. Pyramids and, like, your little friendly robots. You pick them up by running into them as your robot. They also have to get put on your ship, and then you walk back to your ship, get in it, and fly back to base to drop them off. It's trying to stop you doing this. Is a selection of evil robots that walk from left to right across the screen. If they reach your base, then they hurt your energy. And there's missile batteries and all this stuff. But the main issue is that the controls aren't very well done. The robot, for instance, just stops randomly at times, just doesn't respond to your commands on the twin sticks. The ship itself, you can't fire unless you're moving. Which is a really bad design. Like, I don't think it's a design choice. I think it's a bug. It's also your robot gets stuck in the scenery. There are certain bits where the level goes up, like steps, and about 8 times out of 10, your robot will get stuck there, and you'll have to walk back and walk forward. And also, he walks really slowly. It's just...
You're not painting a very... satisfying picture.
Well,
it's
the worst.
Not satisfying. I vouch for
the
Will's...
unsatisfactory nature. Yeah.
Yes,
it's a good idea in theory. It sort of reminds me of this indie game on the Amiga, where only the indie game on the Amiga was a lot better. Where you took control of like a taxi and you had to shuttle people around, but it was all about risk and reward of being, you know, flying around and then landing and stuff, which is essentially the payoff on this game. It's all about the risk of being on the ground. You're slow and your ship's defenseless, so you can get hurt. If you're in the ship, then you can't collect anything. So this is the sort of payoff, but it doesn't work because the controls are so broken. Tracy.
I played a very good game, actually. Starfront.
Collision,
which is very good. And our review's been up for almost a week now, so I won't go through and explain sort of the game itself. But I kind of want to talk about why I think it's so good and, you know, why I decided to give it a 9 on iPhone, knowing that the game is going to be coming to iPad and the bigger screen will enable, you know, easier control. Because I actually had this discussion with another editor from a competing site who gave the game a much lower score and who did that specifically with the intention of wanting to let it come out on iPad and give it a higher score there because it'll be easier to control. I don't necessarily agree with that because I have not seen the iPad version, so I cannot assume that it will be any better, because Gameloft may just end up, you know, kind of scaling it up without tweaking the interface. So that's number one. But number two, the reason why I decided, why I like Starfront Collision so much on iPhone, is because I cannot conceive of a way in which this type of game can be done any better. There are reasons why, there are minor issues why it doesn't get a 10. There are little control snafus. It can be, you know, there are, the controls do work very well. But I'd like to see expanded option to zoom the camera in and out. That would be nice. There can be interface tweaks in terms of the upgrades. Sometimes you have to click on different buildings multiple times in order to access upgrades. I think that could be made easier. I also think that, you know, the way the campaigns are structured, it's very heavily weighted toward the human faction, and there are much fewer missions for the other two factions, the alien factions. I'd like to see it a little bit more balanced.
Presumably that's stuff that they will be updating, isn't it? I mean, that's, you don't think?
Right. These are all very simple things that they can fix. Yeah. So that's why that, but that's also the difference between a game that gets a 9 and a 10.
Yeah.
A 10 game would have all of that stuff, would be, it would be fine. Mm. But a 9, the difference between a 9 and a 10 is very slight. This is a fantastic game. I think what makes it for me is the multiplayer. You know, this, you have one-on-one, you have 2v2, you have 4 free-for-all, all online via Wi-Fi, which is fantastic. No other strategy game does this on iPhone, and I think that is just, that's outstanding. I mean, we're talking, you know, the thing that really struck me about Starfront is I used to be a big PC RTS guy, and I've played tons of real-time strategy games on PC, and this really reminded me of an RTS, of those sort of experiences. You know, it made me think of like Age of Mythology. It made me think of obviously StarCraft, and it to be able to rep, those games are very complicated. They're very difficult to do, to balance the strategy and to get the tactics right with all of the units and to get good maps and to have it packed with depth. And Starfront has all of that. I mean, and that's I think that makes a great game. I think that, yeah, you can sit here and we can nitpick. Yeah, it's not as good as having a mouse and a keyboard. It's not as good as if it was on iPad. But for what it's designed for what it does on this small screen, it's phenomenal. And I was very impressed. And anybody who reads my reviews knows I'm extremely picky. And I just think that if you want a real-time strategy experience, and you buy Starfront, you're going to be immensely pleased. I mean, the multiplayer, I think that is what has, you know, if you look at really a lot of the games that have scored well over the last 12 months, you know, like Starfront, like Real Racing 2, it's these games that are really pushing the multiplayer side. And I think that if you're going to be doing an expensive production, you're going to be doing a big game like this, a AAA release, you really need to start looking at multiplayer. And I'm looking at EA in particular, because I see a lot of their games that are really good, like NBA Jam, for example, has really good gameplay, but they don't have multiplayer. And I think that's missing an opportunity, because it isn't that difficult to implement when you have a good core game. And if you just add that in, it increases the value so much, and really makes the game feel like a complete package, because Starfront feels complete. It feels polished. It feels like a really good value for what you're paying. You're paying, you know, $4, you're paying $7 for this, and you feel like you're getting every penny's worth. So if you want a strategy game, this is definitely the one to get. No question about it. Nothing comes close.
And just to drop a biz point in there, I keep finding out, because I've been, I don't know if readers read biz very much, or listeners of the podcast read our biz site very much.
That's pocketgamer.biz, business site.
But over this week, we've been running our top 50 mobile game developers feature. So obviously, as I just said to someone, it's a terrible thing to do, because you end up kind of pleasing less than 50 developers, and then annoying all the developers minus 50, where all the developers is a large number. So I'm getting some people coming back to me going, why aren't we on the list? Blah, blah, blah. But it's interesting that a lot of them have been people who have done some quite high-profile games for EA. So I've had today, actually, both the guys who did NBA Jam and the guys who did Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 emailing me, kind of saying, why are we on the list? We did these games. And I was like, well, I don't know. You know, EA don't tell me these things. So it is interesting that Gameloft, it does do the complete package because it's developed in-house, so they have complete control over it. Whereas EA is much more going to a third party, giving them a brief, saying this is what we want you to do. And I'm sure the developer would have said, do you want us to do multiplayer? And EA would have said, let's look at the budget. We haven't got the budget. You know, whereas if you were doing that game yourself, you would put, you know, the passion would be to put that in. And I kind of think that's for me is really where the comparison between EA and Gameloft boils down. Yeah. Is EA is doing. Maybe it's still the bigger publisher. Maybe it's more profitable. I don't know, but it gives things out piecemeal to developers who you're just not going to get the quality that you need these days to be the real, you know, kind of bestsellers, top ranked games. You know,
I think that's absolutely right. Yeah, and having discussed with this, you know, similar topics with both of those companies, people from both of those companies, it does definitely come down to their approach, you know, because EA is looking at, okay, we know we want to make, you know, we're starting this game. We have NBA Jam. Okay, we're going to start developing this game. It's going to be for iPod or iPhone and iPod Touch, and we may port it later to Android or another device. So doing multiplayer, for example, is not a wise feature. It's not a cost-effective feature for us to implement because we're ultimately going to strip that out during the porting process. So why should we add it only for iPhone? Sure. And what they've done instead is said, okay, we're going to release this game without multiplayer, and then we're going to add it in an update later. On paper, that makes sense. But what happens, and this certainly is true with Madden NFL 11, which was a great game, another game that is just... I gave it a 9. It was a fantastic football game, American football game, but it didn't have multiplayer. So, you know, when they add that in later, it's kind of too little too late. You know, people have kind of moved on. The football season's over. You know, we just had the Super Bowl. People don't want to play Madden, really. I mean, there people are, you know, but it's kind of, you know, it's like releasing a movie title. It would be like if Gameloft had released Avatar the game 6 months after Avatar had already come and gone out of theaters. It's, you're just not going to get the bang for your buck. And in talking with Gameloft, a lot of their focus is trying to nail it on day one. And I think that's very smart. And I always tell developers this, particularly on iPhone and iPod Touch releases, because there's this compulsion with wanting to do, you know, sort of release the bare minimum in terms of quality and then just update the crap out of it. As though users are going to be really receptive to that. And what I observe is that people are not receptive to that. They buy a game and they say, oh, there's a problem with the controls or it doesn't have multiplayer. Well, I'm just not going to play it. I'm going to move on to the next game because 50 more games get released every day. So
it's also bad for the developer if they do that, because I mean, the people who buy, say, for example, Battlenoids right now, I mean, it doesn't, if in a few weeks' time he updates the controls, that'd be great. But the people that bought the game will always think to themselves, well, that's not a good game. And then, of course, the word of mouth. It's not a good move for developers to release a game which is, you know, not working.
Well, the other thing, you have to think that just the amount of games that come out every week, you know, you just, even people who buy the game and play it and like it for a bit, but you know, a month down the line, you're onto something else. You know, it's kind of like, do I want to come back and, you know, kind of not like relearning controls is a big thing, but you kind of, you know, it's a much faster turnover even than on PC and console, where you, I think you those things can be kind of sync, kind of time syncs for a lot bigger period of time.
Absolutely, I think the updates. I think where updates are a good thing is when you have a good game and you're adding features. Great example of where features have, or where updates have really boosted a game's success, Fruit Ninja. They had a great core game, and then they had a plan. They said, okay, we're going to release this. We need a little bit more time to develop our arcade mode. We need more time to do multiplayer. And because the core game was so satisfying on its own, and people had, you know, in a way, almost low expectations in terms of the value of the game. Oh, it just has this, you know, Zen mode and this classic mode. That's enough to justify the 99-cent 59p purchase. But then they add this stuff and the sales keep going up and the sales keep going up and people are continually pleased with the updates. And that's how you handle it. You can't, you know, it's just like a PC game. You can't release a bad, buggy PC game and then patch it and then all of a sudden expect people to be like, oh yeah, let's buy it. Let's buy it. You know, 2-3 months after the release. It just doesn't work that way.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that. Well, that's what we've been playing in the playing fields. Probably been playing fields, whatever. my little name failed. Yes, so basically the lessons we've learnt today are that John really needs to change the secondary weapon on his Gunbross, and don't release a game that's fundamentally broken. Yes, so next week, most of us will be at GDC, so we're not sure if there's going to be a podcast or not, because the normal time for our recording is exactly the same time as the iPad 2 announcement. I mean the Apple conference, where they announced the iPad 2.
The special event.
Come. Yes.
Sunday's best.
So it's on a Wednesday. So we don't know if there will be a podcast next week. I will try and corral the troops. So there may be an extra special podcast where we hear from maybe even people that you haven't heard before, from the podcast staff. Well, from the Pocket Gamer staff. I will be here. Whether or not anyone else joins me is another matter. So we'll see. But hopefully,
your friend Jack Daniels.
Yeah, Jack Daniels and his wife Stella Artois will definitely be joining me.
So does she beat him? How does that work?
Well, she doesn't. Let's
husband,
not go
husband
there.
Beater.
Is that... Oh no, she's wonderful. She has a bubbly personality.
Yes.
Oh, very good.
Yes, so I'll be there with Jack and Stella, and you're all painting this image of me as a drunk. I don't like this.
No, we also know that you pop pills too. Don't worry.
All right, good. Thank you. As long as there's a bit more balance to this whole image, I don't mind. Damn it. Anyway, I'm off to sniff some glue, but I have been Will Wilson, and remember, kids, don't do that. Kids, by the way, just in case we get the little explicit thing next to our name on the podcast list. Yes, I've been Will Wilson. I've been your host.
I've been Tracy Erickson.
And I've been John Jordan.
And I think next time we all join together, I won't end the podcast in that way. That sort of awkward, why is he doing this again? I thought this was just a one-off joke way. thank you very much for listening. And we might be back next week, but we'll definitely be back in 2 weeks' time. Thank you. Bye.